I'm Marilyn McCarney. Betsy Payette and I are interviewing personnel who were or are instrumental in developing Renfrew Museum and Park. Today is May 5, 1992, and we are interviewing Undine Warner, a current board member and also a member of the first guide group established at Renfrew.
Association of Museums, and most of it being led by Barbara Butler from the Delaware Museum of Natural History. I was very pleased with it. I enjoyed guiding there. I enjoyed, you know, meeting the people. In later years, it has become something a little bit different. During the time that Mr. Koenig was there, some of the decorative arts and the pottery and so on has been moved from the way it was originally, and it's not does not look as much like a home as it did at its inception, and I feel like it's to the detriment of the museum. I like it better when it has more homey touches and so on around. That makes it look more like a home. When I first guided, the curator was James Deemer. He was there a short while, and then Mr. Koenig came. Jim Koenig. Letitia Allen was either before or after James Koenig. I'm not exactly sure. And then, of course, we have now Jamie Smith. James Smith is our curator. Since I had been guiding at Renfrew, since, I guess, about the inception, why I became quite interested in activities there. And in 1982, why, along with L.A. Miller, we got the idea to have a Christmas open house. And I was active in garden clubs, and I said, I'll do the garden clubs. And she said, well, I'll take care of the refreshments. So that's how we started the Christmas open house. And L.A. did a tremendous job. By just she and someone to help her in the visitor center took care of getting all the cookies and making the punch, the hot punch and so on outside. And I took care of scheduling all the garden clubs inside, the Blue Ridge Summit and Tollgate and Antietam garden clubs inside in all the rooms. And it worked very well, and now it's grown tremendously. Now from just one or two nights that we had it, and so now it, I'm quite pleased with that it has worked out that way. When we first started, we didn't even have globes for the windows. We borrowed them all over Waynesboro, and we could only do the front of the house. And we, I guess it was Ed Miller got us candles, and Ellie did too, from leftover from the churches that we used in those candles, and we had to go buy the holders. And since then, under James Koenig, there was another lady there working under him. I cannot remember her name.
Gail Stolliver?
No, it wasn't Gail.
Linda.
anyway, so one day we took the guides on a trip to Williamsburg. We went down to Williamsburg and stopped at Williamsburg Pottery and bought globes for all the windows. And that was a big deal. So then we did have, you know, the globes. So that has been nice for the museum. And then over through the years, I guess after I was on the board, I guess related also to the open house, I thought it'd be nice to treat the guides to something special. The guides and also the people from the garden clubs who had done all the decorating. And so we started an open house on the Friday night before the museum was open to the public. And this was an open house given by the museum board, just for the people from the garden club and the museum staff. And the staff has grown tremendously now. So the last time we had an open house, we had a lot more people than we've ever had before. But it works out very well because the board just takes care of those refreshments themselves. We have it in the museum. So that's has been nice. I've enjoyed that. If I had the chance to do it over again, I don't think I would change in any way my idea of going on the board now and what has happened. There were some outcomes I wish had turned out differently, but I wouldn't change that much. Mrs. Nicodemus left a tremendous legacy to the town, also in the museum and everything that she left in that museum. And I feel like more of it should be seen, have it revolving in some way through the museum so that people can see what we have in storage. Some we don't particularly want, but we're, so to speak, stuck with it because it doesn't fit the house. The Victorian furniture and that sort of thing does not go with the house. But we do have some beautiful, beautiful china that could be used at different times, different places in the museum. And some other pieces moved around. Because as I recall from her will, that the house was supposed to be a house of a farm of 1830, but it was also to show her collection. So we can try to stick to the 1830 theme, particularly in the kitchen, and we have. But as soon as you walk into the dining room, you realize it's not 1830. It has to be, and more formal, it's not country by any means. And so we could easily use some of the other pieces. And the interpreters could explain, this is why we're doing it, showing part of our collection. When I started guiding at Renfrew, Blanche Dukart was in charge of the guides and their training. And I feel that we had excellent training. We had a sheath of material to learn and tried not to memorize it so we would sound extemporaneous when we were giving a tour. But it was very good, I felt. And after Blanche was no longer guiding, had charge of the guides while Ellie Miller scheduled us. And Ellie did an outstanding job. Everybody enjoyed working with her. She had us scheduled a month ahead of time. You knew exactly when you had to be there. And I felt that she did very well. The furniture in the museum was very easy to talk about. It was so interesting and so rare to all of us, and we could learn so much. And that was another thing under Blanche. She encouraged us to read and to learn more about the furniture and all the furniture of that period, which I thought was very nice. Going into the museum, of course, the kitchen is the kitchen of that era, but I think some of the outstanding pieces in the museum sideboard in the dining room, the eight-legged sideboard. And from what I remember now, there's only two of them that are known in existence by this maker. One's in Winterthur and one's in Renfrew. The dining room table is another outstanding piece, and the china that's usually on the table, the Staffordshire and the silver, the Kirk fiddle and thread pattern of silver. We have a quantity of that, and that's very nice, and a large quantity of Canton ware. I think there's around 500 pieces. We don't have it all now. The whole museum, in every one of the rooms, you can find something outstanding that it makes it easy for the interpreters, I'm sure.
Could you give us an idea of the different rooms? What would be outstanding in the front room of the downstairs in each room, please?
All right. Well, to my way of thinking, the outstanding pieces, I guess, in the front parlor would be the Baltimore sofa that's there. Curved. It's just a beautiful, dainty piece. There are two Martha Washington lolling chairs.
Lolling chairs.
They're outstanding. L-O-L-L-I-N-G. And also the secretary that's there. I know Jim Coney complained about that. We had it in the museum originally, and he said that it was a married piece. It's in two sections, and he took it out, and there was such a hue and cry from everybody, including members of the board, that it's back now. He said it did not belong there, but it's back. And the parlor in the back, it was the office, I guess, is what they have called it when they initially set up the museum. It's a small room behind the front parlor. They have a gaming table set up now with cards and so on. But I think it had been more or less an office because the back door of the house opens right into that. Some beautiful Windsor chairs there. They're beautiful. With the original paint, they haven't been refinished or anything. And the shades of all the red and the green and blue and everything. And it makes them very nice. And there had been a desk there from the Shenandoah Valley, but I think that has been moved. And upstairs, in the children's room, as you come up the staircase, the first room on your right, there's a bed in the corner, a child's bed. And our understanding is that that bed had belonged to Mrs. Nicodemus when she was a child, and had it with her when she went to school down at Emmitsburg, I guess the boarding school. And I think this is right, I'm not sure. It was an old rope bed. There are frock tours on the wall there that are very nice. And then in the country bedroom, which would be the east bedroom, there's a beautiful curly maple bed that and a big four-poster with a beautiful, I say curly maple, I guess it's tiger maple. And also the bedside table is also the same wood. A lot of the bed is covered right now with the curtain draperies, but you can't see that wood, but it's there. In the corner is a beautiful Pennsylvania tall chest. And then across the hall in the what we usually call the city bedroom, it's really the west bedroom upstairs. There's a bed they call a Charleston bed because you can remove the head and the front of the bed and put it out in the middle of the room to catch the breezes in the summertime. In later years, we have found that this is a reproduction. We didn't know it at the time, but we just call it the Charleston bed. There's a chest of drawers in there. It's a Bombay chest. It curves out in the front. It's beautiful inlaid. There's a stove, an iron. iron stove in that fireplace. Now, I'm not sure where that one was made, so I shouldn't have mentioned it. The gallery, we have a changing gallery, of course. And right now, there's a beautiful collection of spatterware there, put in by the guest curator, David Thomas. We have our own spatterware, too, though, down in the kitchen. That is outstanding. That is on that Mrs. Nicodemus's. It's too bad. Some of the people seem to think that a lot of these things were given to the museum. The interior, maybe some furniture and the decorative arts, but 98% of everything in that museum was given to Mrs. Nicodemus. We haven't added that much. Dr. Guyton has given some pieces, pictures and that sort of thing. And the stove in the kitchen, the iron stove, was made in Mont Alto, was given. But everything in there was Mrs. Nicodemus, and so when you think about it, this lady amassed this tremendous collection of beautiful decorative arts. And I think that the Waynesboro area should really appreciate it, because it is outstanding for a town the size of Waynesboro. In the dining room, I forgot to mention the sideboard and the importance of that sideboard. Initially, when the museum opened, when we first started guiding in the early years, no one had really researched that sideboard, and we were told, since we had known nothing about it, just to ignore it, stand in front of it and guide and interpret the rest of the furniture in the room. So it wasn't until Jim Coney came that he started to really search for a signature on that piece of furniture, and using a flashlight and taking some drawers apart and looking down, he found a signature. And I'm not sure of the name. I think it was Thomas Conklin or something out of Connecticut. And it's a very rare piece of furniture. And we were told later then that there were just a few pieces made, and this was one of two. The other one that we know of was at Winterthur. And so now it, of course, has turned into be one of the most important pieces in the museum. Right now, I see in the future, under the direction of Jamie Smith, the overall picture. You can see the whole forest and not just the trees of the whole development of Renfrew, which we have not had before. And so now with the establishment of the Institute, things have grown just tremendously, and there's a great deal of interest from the whole community in Renfrew. And I guess as he feels, and I feel, and probably some other people feel, there might be such a thing as too much, as an overuse of the land, and we might ruin it. So we're going to have to curb ourselves that this doesn't happen to this. Okay. This has been given to us as a gift, and I think we should do our very best to preserve it and take care of it. We've talked an awful lot today just about the museum, but we must not forget the wonderful bell collection that we have in the visitor center. Most people, when they first hear of Waynesboro in this area and the museum, the first thing they ask about is the bell collection of the John Bell Pottery. I think we should do our very best to try to preserve that area and keep that bell collection where it is, and probably enlarge it. Right now we're getting a little bit crowded with institute work and office work in that particular building.